Hi. How was your Ooh. Look at you. Look Ooh. At you. You're so you're ready. She's got a shirt on. She's ready. To be fair, Quinn always has a shirt on when we do these things. I think it's
always do the recording topless. It's so weird. Why do I do that?
We've made sort of like fun little things of like, we can't put this out. And it's because Quinn's naked
it's
the whole time.
I'm always naked.
And it's, but it's wonderful for me. It's sad that you can't see it. It's just a good time by
it's
all.
It's a good time. We're good time gals, if nothing else.
Hey, we're great. We're not good time gals. We're great time gals. Great time gals. We're great time gals. By the way, Quinn, Woo! I do have some bad news for you. What? What? Is that the faces? You're scared? I just canceled my Hulu subscription.
No.
Here's why I did it. Because it's owned by Disney. And they canceled Jimmy Kimmel. And I feel like I have to do something. And so I'm doing that. I think that I know it's little, but it's all I can do.
I'm currently not watching anything on Hulu. I would be really mad at you, though, if I was in the middle of something.
Here's the thing is you have 8 days. It is the ring. I'm giving you the ring. You have eight days. I know. It's really bad. I mean, you know.
When are we going to get canceled? We're so lucky that we're not important.
We're so lucky that we make no money, that we have no consequences. Yay!
The luckiest ladies in the world.
Quinn and I worked together yesterday. So fun. Wait, how was Inga's?
It was great. It was delicious and not affordable, but here we go. I had the funniest week. I just felt like I was on a TV show, but I needed an audience to feel a little bit better about the things going
wrong. Wait,
hold
on. My fan is on, so I'm going to turn off because I think it's probably annoying. That's better, isn't it?
Yeah, that is better. So... An example would be I had orientation for my internship and I was nervous. So I was like looking, how do I get there? And it said it's going to be a 46 minute subway ride or a 51 minute walk. So I was like, I'll walk because anxiety.
Wait, you're that close?
Well, here's the thing. I won't actually be in the location that we met at for the orientation.
Gotcha.
So I was looking and I'm like, okay, it's a 51 minute walk. I'm going to walk. And because it's my first day, I'm nervous. So I wore tennis shoes and I packed therapist shoes.
Oh my gosh, you're a working girl.
A professional lady. So what was so hysterical is I get a block away and I'm like hiding in a bush. I'm like, no one can see this.
Of course.
I'm like Superman.
This is vulnerable. Like also showing the bottom of your feet the first day is like showing your topless here at Truly Darkly Creepily. Like you just, it's a lot of vulnerability.
So I, you know, did my quick change, put on my cape. I like put on these shoes. I walk up. A woman opens the door, shakes my hand and is like, and you can leave your shoes right here.
Now, how smelly were your feet?
I would have gotten a pedicure if I knew that we were going to be exposing Piggly
Wigglys. Dogs. If the dogs are out,
we already done a
know.
Socks and shoes option, so it was a little nerve-wracking. What I did like and what you would have appreciated is it was a four-hour orientation from 10 to 2. And Carrie?
Did they have food?
They served breakfast and lunch.
There it is, Quinn.
And I was like, wow, this is like an eating contest. So that
and
felt
what was
great.
Served?
Breakfast was bagel and muffin spread and coffee and OJ, and lunch was Mexican, so no complaints.
In 4 hours, two meals.
I ate a lot of food. I was very nervous, so I was eating as fast as I could and talking with my, like, food falling out of my mouth. I'm sure I made a great first impression. And we got to do art therapy for us.
Oh.
Like someone came in and did a little art therapy with us. And I was like, this
rules.
Cushy.
My friend just asked me if I was busy on Sunday because he needs someone to do DBT therapy.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm busy. But I would love to help him out. I would love to have my friend therapize me.
Yeah.
That would be so fun.
That's great.
Yeah.
Oh, and then... The other funny story is, have you ever gone to a sample sale?
Yes, I have.
Tell me how it went for you. I'm so curious.
I mean, I think I walk in with my dukes up because I'm someone that's not fitting sample sizes, right? Like I'm a curvy girl. And so the sample size, so I walk in kind of being like, none of this is going to work. And then like, hopefully, but there are people like, from what I understand is like, people can get absolutely fucking feral.
Yeah. So, you know, Farm Rio?
No.
Farm Rio is cool. It's White Lotus vibes.
Great.
Completely. So it's like my pink jumpsuits from there. And it's great. Very bold, playful prints. A lot of them tropical.
Your
a
vibe.
Little over the top. And so it's hard to want to spend money because everything's a statement piece. It's not like you're not getting a staple. You're getting something that's pretty wild. And Becca knows I like them. So she sent to me the other day, oh, look, Farm Rio's having a sample sale. And it was on a day that I was already going to be in the city, in the neighborhood working. And I had to work at noon, and the sample sale started at 10. So I showed up right at 10, and it's a line. And I'm like, oh. So I get in the line outside the building, and it's moving pretty slow. I got to tell you, I just get out my homework. I'm just doing homework in line, and I'm in a music league. I listened to the song. I voted. I did a few things.
Oh, I love music league. We used to do that at Truly Darkly Creepily.
It's fun. So I'm doing all that, and I waited in line an hour and a half.
Yes.
So now it's 11:30 and I'm being let in, and I think to myself, to get to work on time, you have about 20 minutes in here. So you're going to need to be serious and make, and it's scary because that's not what I'm good at, is like fast decisions.
Well, also the fact that you've waited for an hour and a half, it's a little bit like the line at Disney where it's like it builds anticipation and anticipatory anxiety. And so once you're like let out, I haven't eaten
and my anxiety was already peak because I had been looking at the time a bunch being like, am I even going to make it in? So my anxiety was already peak. I walk in, I check my bag as they make you do, and I start to browse with power behind it, and people are sometimes a little bit pushing you, like in this way where like an elbow is just like, and someone's standing in front of something and you go to take something off a rack to try it on and somebody's like, that's mine, that's already mine, and you're like, oh, okay, and then you're like, that's fine. And it's a lot of, everyone has a really high energy. It feels like there's not enough for all of us, which is incorrect. They're constantly restocking the shelves, but that only creates a situation of being like, should I never leave?
Am I missing something?
Constant FOMO, constant lapse. And I shopped so quickly and I found, I mean, and the prices on Farm Rio stuff, like I feel like sweaters are $250. Jumpsuits and dresses are upper twos. Maybe even threes. They're expensive. This place had a sign that was like maxi dresses, which was the most expensive thing you could buy, and outerwear were 90. And then sweaters were 40. Shirts were 20. Yeah. It was good, pretty good prices for nice stuff. So I got two sweaters that I loved and a shirt that I loved, and they were wild and fun, and I fell for them. And I was like, this is great.
Oh,
and I go to, and then I go to get online. And I'm like looking at the time, and the line's like 12 people deep to buy, and they're not moving fast. And I realize
I'm heartbroken.
I have to go to work. So, so my whole morning.
I'm so sad for you.
So I like hang up the things I got. No. And one woman who had seen me in line and knew my situation, she goes, are you sure? And I go, yeah, I have to go to work. And she goes, I'm going to wait online and I have therapy in 15 minutes. And I said, yeah, but that's your therapy. You're paying for it. Somebody's paying me to show up to work on time. I got to go.
So, I was hoping she'd be like, I'll buy it. Can you give me cash?
I know. And I'll meet up with you later. And she'd probably trick me. Anyway, and then I realized that in the mad dash of looking for all my things, I lost my ticket for my bag. So then I'm like scrambling to find this ticket, and then I'm telling the guy, I'm like, there is nothing worth anything in this bag, and I'll tell you every item in it. And he's kind of like, oh. So it was a disaster. And then I run out of there, and I had to run because I was going to be late. So I'm running to work, and I'm like, that was such a weird way to spend a morning. Like, genuinely So crazy.
So much to unpack in terms of the psychology of it. And I'm truly, like, I feel sad for you because I know that feeling. And also, like, obviously the stakes are not high. There's, like, a lot of other things happening that I think are more important in the world. We're all able to realize that.
No, I think you're wrong. I think the most important thing. You didn't see the sweater. You didn't see the sweater.
They were fucking. And also, I do hear the price. And that, to me, is, like, you know me. I'm like, ooh, I love it.
These were going to be great pieces.
I'm so sad for you, Quinn. Story. I genuinely, my heart, I'm like, ugh, I
so
feel for
you. If any listeners want to send me anything from Farm Rio, P.O. Box. No, I'm just kidding.
We don't have a P.O. Box. It's going to be Quinn's home address, which is. Wow. Well, last weekend, KK came into town from L.A., and I got to see her every day that she was here, and I had so much fun with her.
That's too many days.
We danced. We ate fun things. We went to a park. It was so wonderful. We got to work on our script in person, which was so fun to, like, not be over Zoom and be physically with each other and breathing fresh air and, like, coming up with bits and fun ideas. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, this is actually how... this feels better. And I was so, here's the thing is, did I party a little too hard? Yeah. And at one point, I'm like trying to, you know, I'm casual, I'm cool, I'm calm. I'm like, yeah, come back. I hope you love LA. And in my mind, I'm like, come back.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, it's so, because I mean, I've just spent, last year I was with her and her alone for 4 months. So, like, obviously we have, she's codependent. Very close. It's codependent is what it is. It's codependent. And so, at one point, I was, like, partying too hard, and I was like, come back! Like, I said it on full voice, mm-hmm. and one of her friends was like, gentle touch.
Like, gentle touch, I like
But it
that.
Was very funny. I do think that the spirit in which it was delivered was love, and I think that that is how it was received, was that just, like, I love and miss those people, and I want them back. Mm-hmm. But it was so crazy. We were actually... in Manhattan going to dinner, and we just happened to be around the corner grabbing a drink, and we're chatting, and all of a sudden, my dear friend Havala, who also lives in LA, happened to be there, and she was just in town for 2 days, so she didn't do the thing where she's like, I'm in town, but I can't see you, because she had plans, and it was a very quick trip, which totally mm-hmm. understandable.
But then she had to see you anyway. She was, like, caught. She was busted.
I was going to text you. I really thought about it. And I was like, I don't care. Like, what a fucking mitzvah. You're here. And then all of us got to, like, have a drink before we had dinner. And I got to see her. And so I had all these people from LA who I love and adore who were, like, in the same place. It was really, that was really, really special. That was a really fun surprise that I loved.
Yeah.
This weekend.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm really glad that you got your friend dosage.
I got a really good friend dosage. I got a really good friend dosage. Embarrassment of riches of people from out of town coming and seeing me, and it feels so good. And I'm actually
were money, right?
Oh, they're better. They're priceless, Quinn. And then I'm going to Philadelphia or a place in New Jersey. I don't know. My friend's in a play.
I hope you find it.
I'll get there. But I'm gonna go drive. I have my friend's car, and so I'm gonna go drive and see his show. Mm-hmm. With a bunch of friends on Saturday night. So that's going to be super fun. Yeah. Anyway.
I'm going dancing on Saturday. And it sounds really fun. It's this place that does, what is it called?
Cocaine.
No.
It's this place that does cocaine.
I think I'm going to have to check my phone for it. Anyway, it doesn't matter what it's called. It's a place that does dance parties 6 to 10. And they're like, starts at promptly at 6. It rages hardest at 8. It's over by 10. And the theme for this, they always do themes. And Saturday's theme is 40s, meaning 40-year-olds, where I guess they play 80s, 90s, and early 2000s music. And I'm going with my friend V and a bunch of her girlfriends that I met the other night on her roof. She had a party.
Matt was telling me.
We did shot skis. It was fun.
Incredible.
I've learned how to play flip cup. It was a grown-up party, so people were using seltzer. It was fun.
Wait, Quinn, you've never played flip cup before?
No, I went to Sarah Lawrence.
Wait a minute.
I barely played beer pong, so they were lucky I knew that one. And I was so good at beer pong. Yeah. It shocked everyone.
Really?
Especially me.
I'm not good at beer pong. I am good at flip cup. I'm very good at flip cup.
Yeah, it was really
That's
fun
my
party.
Sport.
And if anybody wants an absolute showstopper for their next party, somebody brought something called
Wiggles
or something. Oh, shit. I wish
these
I knew.
These were I want to be very clear. They're the most stunning thing I've ever seen.
They're Jell-O shots. It's a box of Jell-O shots. And if you get a mixed box, it's maybe four flavors of each of 12 different things. And it's like Mezcal Negroni, Dirty Martini, Lychee Martini, Strawberry Daiquiri. But each one, maybe you've seen chocolates like this before. Each one looks like an absolute work of art. Like, just gorgeous. And so just looking at it is very pleasing. And then Matt had a Mezcal Negroni one, and he maybe took like an hour to eat it. He was like...
He did say he nibbled it.
Yeah, it was very embarrassing. But he was like really trying to appreciate it. Good for him.
It was really embarrassing. I went... When I did the fish share on Wednesday, I didn't tell you, when I did the fish share on Wednesday, I realized I didn't have like enough liquor in my house. Like I had like a bottle of tequila, and I was like, oh, I need to have stuff for cocktails. Like I need to have stuff for old fashions, Negronis, and martinis.
Yeah, of course.
And a margarita.
You're a grown up. Of course you do.
An adult. And so I bought the fucking gamut. I fucking went for it. And
I bet everybody loved you for that in there.
So now I can like make cocktails. Hey, we got to thank some Patreons because we have, here's the thing is, I don't know. Did we thank, I really hope we thanked everybody, because I was looking back and I was like, did we thank Rochelle from, hold on. Did we thank Rochelle from August 9th? Because I also have, I don't know.
You don't
There's
know
a person,
we
April.
Rochelle.
Did we thank April?
Yeah, we did.
We thanked April.
We did thank April.
Shelly.
I think
Shelly. Heather.
I think Justine and Sylvia.
Justine and Sylvia.
Have not been thanked.
Okay. Justine and Sylvia. We got to thank them.
Those are the two.
Those are the two. Okay. And a five. Six, seven, eight.
Sylvia. Sylvia.
Wrong name, we said. Sylvia, you
I
are.
Thought you were going to thank Justine while I thanked Sylvia.
I could. No, we got to give them their own songs. Because
right,
I don't know
right,
if they're going
right.
to be using this as their own.
We don't know
own.
If they're friends.
I don't know. I don't know if they're
then
friends.
They can't do the ringtone.
I know. Okay. So, Sylvia.
Sylvia.
It's not Sylvia like that drug. It's Sylvia like a hug. Sylvia,
you're so silly.
You're so silly. You're a silly Billy, Sylvia. Thank you for being here, Sylvia. You are so fun and a star in our eyes. We love you so much. Sylvia. We want to give you pies. Not in the face, but for your tummy and love.
What kind of pie do you like, Sylvia? Do you like an apple pie? Do you like blueberry? I think you like stories that are scary. Welcome to Patreon.
We love that you're here.
Done.
That felt low energy, but I feel like, Sylvia, we're just approaching it where we're at in the moment.
They can't all be the same genre of
no,
song.
No, I know.
Like,
and sometimes
I knew how to sing,
really
I don't know, like okay, a Scottish
we'll do a
dirge, I would.
Scottish dirge. Should we do a ska version of for Justine? Justine! Justine!
Justine!
Let's get weird!
You know what
Justine,
I mean!
Justine!
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 You're a machine that gives
Justine, Justine,
money
you're a machine
to Patreon. You know you can't go wrong, or can you? We're proving that you can. This is a terrible song, Justine. Justine, Justine. Don't be mean to me because I did this to you. That would make me so blue. I love you, Justine.
Justine, Justine, Justine. Let's get mean. We're not so mean because we're so happy you're here. Wow.
Terrible.
New genre
actually,
unlocked.
Very terrible.
New genre unlocked.
Upsetting.
Very upsetting. Very upsetting.
See, they should turn their focus away from Kimmel and onto us. We're the people that need to be taken off.
What is really fun is I think both, what's really great about that is even when Quinn and I were screaming for you, Justine, we did keep it at a whisper. We kept it at a respectful whisper. We had the intention of screaming, but we didn't go full voice. No, ma'am.
Welcome to Truly.
Darkly.
Creepily.
I'm Carrie Epema.
I'm Quinlan Padna.
And this year, This year, we do one episode a year.
This year, we do tell stories.
We tell stories. I go first.
Okay, fine.
My turn.
Fuck you.
Look, if you're still buying weed from some guy named Trevor in a parking lot, you're doing it wrong. Mood.com delivers legal THC products straight to your door. Gummies, vapes, flower, the good stuff. No sketchy DMs, no med card. Just add to cart, check out, and boom, it's at your doorstep. It's legal in all 50 states thanks to the Farm Bill, and Mood's products actually work. Seriously, this isn't gas station garbage. It's small batch, lab tested, real results. Go to mood.com, use code FIRST20 for 20% off, and never run dry again. That's mood.com. Go get lit, legally.
Okay, I got this one article. It's a one article wonder, Quinn. You bet your, guess where I got this one article from? Our favorite.
Texas Monthly.
Amen, babe. A fucking men. This article was so intense. I had to read it in multiple times. I had to read it multiple layers, multiple occasions, because it was long. I did not get all the information because there's a lot of superfluous information. So if you want to know more, hit it up. It is Texas Monthly, and the article is called, oh my God, I have to scroll up. That's how long it's taking me to scroll up. It was a long article. It was already one of Texas's strangest cold cases. Then a secretive figure appeared.
Is this Jason Landry?
Yes.
Great.
Here's the thing that I'm going to tell you. The article being titled, and then a mysterious figure appeared. I'm actually not going to cover that part of the story.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I can see
because
why.
I think,
that part
I think
is
the
so,
story, it's a little
it's
convoluted.
Very convoluted.
Yeah. It's very confusing. Completely. I think, and honestly, like, I think if you're interested in the politics around it and the mystery around it, I'll get into the more of that later. But I think I want to keep this kind of a clean version of this case because I think the case itself is
no
quite compelling.
Cursing.
Fuck. Oh my God, by the way, I saw Weapons last night.
Oh, was it great?
It was great. It was so fun. This is the first time I've been to a movie by myself.
Oh, great.
Yeah. We're making progress. Seeing a scary movie by yourself is scary. Luckily, our friend Jared is there, but like I kept covering my eyes, and I think the thing I love about seeing a scary movie with people is sharing in that experience. Whereas, like, by myself, I was like, I literally was looking through my fingers. Like, yeah. I screamed once. There were things I didn't see because I closed my eyes. Props to my reflexes because the eyes were shut before I knew it was happening. And
eyes
so I was like,
wide
oh,
shut, baby.
I go, I don't, oh, I wish I knew what that was because I didn't know. But I think that director, is it Zach Krenin? Who's the director of that? Hold on. Because he did Barbarian.
Oh.
Let me see.
I love that movie.
Yeah, I do too. Yeah, I do too.
Me too.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, Zach Kreger. Mm-hmm. What I love about his movies is I think the tonal shifts in them are so playful and there's humor in it and it's surprising. Like I think anytime a film surprises me, I'm like, oh, I love. Like I saw the trailer, which I don't love seeing a trailer before seeing a movie, to be honest, but I saw the trailer and what the movie was, like I was surprised. It took me on turns that I didn't see coming. I was scared. There were moments of laughter, but it was all really fun. It was a fun one. I really loved.
Yeah, I can't wait.
I really loved. I can't wait for you to see it. Okay. So I first want to explain to you, or I want to describe, I want to introduce you to 21-year-old Jason Landry. He is described in this article as a golden retriever, which I love. Yeah. I think he's like just a happy guy. Some quotes from his friends were, he's not afraid, always making friends with people, just a good dude. And a lot of parents felt like he could have been their kid, right? Like he was just a good guy. He liked video games and he listened to music with his friends. He'd play Frisbee. One thing they do harp on in the article was that he loved his socks. Like on December 12th, in his text to his mom, he was giving her a list of what he wanted for Christmas and it involved socks. And he was like, I want wacky and cool socks, not basic ones, but ones with like tacos and dogs on them. They describe one of his socks as like one sock has a monkey with a briefcase and the other sock has covered in bananas and it just says monkey business. So it's like very fun. He's just like a fun, silly sock kind of guy. He started off his freshman year at Sam Houston State, and he came from the Houston suburbs of Texas. And apparently when he started freshman year, he was like a clean-cut kid. You know, he's coming from his parents' home. And then when he went to college, he sort of loosened up. He started wearing tie-dye hoodies, tie-dye t-shirts. He smoked a little pot. In his third year, he transferred to Texas State University, and his grades started to improve. And then it's 2019, 2020, COVID hits. And they remark in this article about how I think like a lot of kids who are very social, gregarious, outgoing, COVID became a time of isolation, and that it probably wasn't good for him. You know, mm-hmm. he's this optimistic, outgoing guy, and he's put into isolation, and in doing so, he was self-medicating. He was smoking more pot. They even describe him as sort of like a Spicoli from Dazed and Confused. Is that Dazed and Confused is Spicoli?
I don't know that.
No, it's Fast Times at Ridgemont High. It's a Sean Penn Spicoli. It's like a stoner. They kind of are like, he's kind of like a stoner. But his dad would say he was stuck in a small apartment in a small room on an empty floor. It was like solitary confinement for him. And I'm not surprised that he self-medicated. His dad, who I believe was a trial attorney and is now a pastor, I believe, is his profession. So it's December 2020. He's smoking a lot of pot. He's ordering food. He's sharing videos with his friends of him smoking weed. And he was starting to talk to his friends about how he was trying to get his life back on track. In Instagram messages that they will find is that he will tell his friends that with the help of drugs, he found God and truly saw God for the first time ever. Some people theorize that it's possible that he was avoiding food and avoiding sleep in order to increase the efficacy of the weed he was taking. His close friends said it seemed more obvious that his messages or his communications were not making a ton of sense. Whether that was the isolation, self-medicating from the weed, possible like putting himself into a deprived state of sorts. Mm-hmm. One of his friends said Jason would talk about the rapture coming, aliens, Jesus, Elon Musk, and all these things that he would tie together somehow. He starts to get interested in mysticism. He's finding connection between psychedelics and spiritual experiences. And he's texting a friend, dude, I low-key have always wanted to be a monk and reach spiritual enlightenment someday and levitate from meditation or turn into a stone statue and achieve nirvana or something. So he seems like he's really going down this path of like spirituality, mysticism that's being exacerbated by potential drug use and isolation. So it's December 12th, 2020. He speaks to his family. He had finished his finals earlier this week, and he worked his last shift at dun-dun-dun, Jimmy John's, where I also worked in college. So he and I have a lot in common. Then on the 13th of December, he FaceTimes his friends. There's no audio to this, but you can see the FaceTime. I don't see it, but they have it in evidence. But the FaceTime is 45 minutes long. It doesn't have sound. He's like rolling a joint. He's showing off his sweaty pit stains. It seems like a casual conversation between a friend. He decides he's going to go home. He packs a bag of toiletries, a PlayStation game console, his laptop, joints that are in a pill container. He grabs his Siamese fighting fish and he puts it in a plastic tumbler that he uses to transport the fish to and fro. He's wearing t-shirt, shorts, sandals, and his SpongeBob socks. He gets into his 2003 Nissan Altima and he puts his home address into Waze. His home is in Missouri City, Texas, which is 165 miles away. So it's about 2.5 hours is the approximate time. And so by 11 o'clock that night, he hits the road, which is late. My mom would not want me to leave that late, but he decides to leave at 11 o'clock that night. He's speaking to his ex-girlfriend. He's speaking to his friend. He's using both FaceTime and Snapchat. He seems to be in very good spirits. Also that night, just as a anecdote, there's this Geminid meteor shower, and apparently the skies are very clear at this part of Texas. So it would have been like a very beautiful sight to behold, this meteor shower happening during this drive. He reaches the town of Lulling at 11:24 p.m., and the directions are supposed to be that he takes a right, and he turns onto another interstate to go home. Mm-hmm. Instead of turning right, he just continues to go straight, and he heads towards Salt Flat Road, which is far and away from his destination. It's in the opposite direction, and he keeps going for a couple of miles. At 11:28, 4 minutes later, he sends his ex a Snapchat selfie from his car. And that is the last time anyone will see or hear from Jason. Mm-hmm. What we then know is this. We will find Jason's car on Salt Flat Road. It is this 7-mile passageway between Lulling before it turns to gravel. And then it meanders through central Texas countryside, which is it's on the edge of oil fields. Mm-hmm. And everybody says that it smells like rotten eggs because it's a bunch of oil fields. Cars have been left here. It's not a rare occurrence for a car to have been left here. Occasionally there's a flat tire or possibly an oil worker took a turn too fast mm-hmm. and has to be like, oh, this car is in barbed wire. I gotta go. But his car is spotted without him at 12:30 in the morning. So less than an hour or a little over an hour after his last communication with the outside world. The car is wedged against a tree facing the wrong direction. The airbag has not been deployed. There is damage to the body of the car, and the rear window is shattered. The engine is off, but the keys are still in the ignition. The lights are on in the car. There is no sign of Jason. He is not there. A local firefighter comes in, and at 1:15 in the morning, he thinks maybe someone crashed the car. They got scared. They fled the scene. In the body cam footage, you hear him say, "What in the world was he doing down this road?" 900 feet from the car, they find Jason's black backpack, and in it it is filled with his wallet, his laptop, toiletries, the plastic tumbler with his fish, and the fish is dead. 12 feet from that, they find his clothes. What is interesting about it is that these clothes are put in a little piles. Mm-hmm. They find his watch facing out. They also find his shoes. They find his underwear is in one of these piles, and there's a small blood stain on the waistband, and they find his SpongeBob socks. It's cold. The temperatures will range from 36 to 43.
That's freezing.
That's freezing. It's very, very cold.
Take off your clothes weather.
No, decidedly not take off your clothes weather. But it's cold, and he's naked, and we do know that Jason is in trouble. He could be hypothermic. Like, it's not a good situation. The police go and get his parents, and they tell them that they found narcotics in his bag and that he may be under the influence and he needs help. His dad immediately gets in his car. He drives to the scene. And when he gets there, it's not great. It's all bad. But he gets there, and what's really alarming to him is by the time he gets there, Jason's car has already been towed. There is no crime scene tape anywhere. Okay. There is nobody taking photos. There is no one collecting evidence. Mm-hmm. It is just his dad mm-hmm. by himself looking for his son. In fact, apparently he calls his mom. Jason's mom will call the state trooper to get some information. At that point, the state trooper is already asleep and in bed, is at home and in bed. Mm-hmm. So it feels like no one is taking this seriously.
Like,
and we're losing like a lot of valuable time in these initial hours.
Yeah, of course.
So his dad takes out his phone. He starts filming the crash site. He's trying to record tire marks.
Being his own cop.
Yeah, he's like taking picture of the layout of his clothes. The next morning, he goes to get the car from the tow yard, and that's where he finds Jason's phone in the car still. These critical hours are wasted because people are not taking it seriously. Yeah. The next day, they realize that the severity of it is significant, and so they start to engage professional teams to start searching. They get dogs to track the scent. Volunteers show up. In all, they searched 31,000 acres. 2 days after the disappearance, these dogs start leading them to this small pond. And they think that sonar is picking up something not far off the shore. They have a dive team go down. There's no sign of Jason. The landowner gives them permission to pump the pond. So what they do is they take 3 days and they remove all of the water of the pond, hoping to find Jason. Nothing. Mm. They have been searching now for 9 days. They have found nothing. They suspend the initial search. They will continue and pick it up every couple months. So they'll pick it up again in February. This is in December. They'll pick it up again in February. They'll pick it up again a year later, continue to look. At this point, there's so many questions that they don't have answers to. They theorize maybe he was under the influence of drugs. Maybe he got in this car accident. He had a head injury. And why we can't find him is because we can't follow a linear or a sensical path that he took, right? Wherever we could sort of assume he went based on head injury and drug use, maybe he did the complete opposite and we went the wrong way. Did the meteor shower that night affect him? You know, he talked about seeing God. Did something happen? Was there self-harm involved? After he took off his clothes, you know, did he walk into he was walking into pretty unforgiving territory in Central Texas because it's really hilly. It's a wooded area. There's barbed wire. There's steep gullies. There's creeks. There's electrical equipment. There's rusted oil pumps. Did he fall into something? But still, what's so confusing is that nobody has seen him. And in these oil fields, people are there. Like, it's not like nobody's there. And the amount of search that they've done, again, they have found nothing. The fact that there's been no sign of him is super bizarre. Someone said, it's not like it's the middle of nowhere with no people and just some cows and nobody ever goes there. There's people out there every day, every single day. So yeah, it's very, very strange. And that's why I think there's more to the story than Jason just driving off the road. This case elicits an insane widespread outpouring of support and enthusiasm and energy to find him. There are various professionals who will be consulted and will offer their expertise in the case, one of which is this guy, Kim Rossmo, who people referred to as a modern-day Sherlock Holmes. He's a renowned criminologist. He's a former cop from Vancouver. And what he's done is he's developed an algorithm for calculating the probable location of an offender's residence. It's a technique called geographic profiling. And so he uses statistical tools to prioritize like all this information. It's been used to find, you know, serial killers, serial rapists, arsonists. It even weirdly, like, he's tracked great white sharks, the probable sources of IEDs in Afghanistan, possible helping to uncover the identity of Banksy. There's like a lot of things. Additionally, I think this algorithm led to the discovery of Canada's most notorious serial killer, Robert Picton, the guy who was feeding his victims to his pigs. I think you covered that case, didn't you? Or no. Did I? I think I did. So he was engaged by the police to start looking into this case. And when he got to the scene of the crime, he took his shoes off and he's like, I couldn't walk 10 feet before it was too painful.
Right.
Like, I'm not walking barefoot in this
weird
place.
Wow.
When he was out and about, he ran into some of the landowners and one of the guys turned a gun on him and threatened to shoot him. And he was like, oh, okay, maybe that's like a new lead. Maybe this guy was naked into someone's land. They shoot him and he's buried in private land. That's a possibility that could happen. What's interesting about the guy that pulled a gun on him was that he's known around town for killing two dogs and shooting his own son over a disagreement.
Okay, it's that guy.
So it's that guy. They talk about Jason undressing and they talk about paradoxical undressing. We've talked about it's paradoxical undressing, which is like your body's blood vessels restrict. So it feels hot even when you're freezing cold. And so in a moment of like stress, you take off all your clothes and it ends up and then you find has this animalistic instinct to find a small space. This is not very common, and that's why I also recognize that it's 36 to 43 degrees out, which is also, it's very cold, no doubt about it. And yet, it's like, it's paradoxical undressing is a pretty rare phenomenon. However, his use of drugs could have led to that as well. Again, there's just so much we don't know. It's possible that he hid in a small space and he was eaten by animals. There's a wild hog theory where they believe that there's a bunch of wild hogs and maybe one of them ate him. But the people are like, but there were never any vultures. And if there were, we see vultures all the time. This is a cow pasture. If a cow were to die, we see these scavenger animals feeding off these corpses, we would have seen that if it was, if it happened to Jason.
Mm-hmm.
What's also interesting about this case is that this case led to the forming of dozens of Facebook pages and over 50,000 members just dissecting the case on Facebook, which Rossmo would say, not everybody thinks they can be a military general or a neurosurgeon, but everyone thinks they're a detective. And to that, I say, yeah, that's true.
Yes, we
here we are. What's interesting about the Facebook pages is that a lot of the people that are involved or actively searching are middle-aged parents themselves, and they're drawn to his case.
Mm,
so
that makes sense.
A lot of these people would spend weekends combing the area for remains.
Yeah.
A lot of them, it became their whole identity, like a belief system in a lot of ways. One member says that he spent $50,000 of his own money trying to get answers about the disappearance. Another man, Abel Pena, who's a retired FBI agent, was following the case because his youngest daughter knew Jason and he was taken with this case. And he believes that the real issue was when Jason didn't turn one way or the other in lulling and he kept going straight. He thinks that maybe there was some drug interference, maybe someone got in his car, maybe that he wasn't alone in his car. We don't know, but he's like, I think that someone in lulling knows more than they're letting on.
Yeah.
He said that the police and him were working together. They were sharing information, and then it soured when the police became attached to this wild animal theory. That's what happened to Jason. And the internet is still actively searching. There are many internet theories. There is a theory that he staged his disappearance and fled to Mexico, which I love that theory. That means that this person is alive. And it ties to this idea of mysticism. There's also cults, aliens. Maybe he was hit by an oil worker and buried on private land. It's been 5 years, almost 5 years.
Yeah.
And his family has, while they held out hope that he would be alive and he would be found alive, by now, they believe him to be dead.
Yeah.
And for them, it helps them as they think he's not hurt, he's not injured, he's not in pain. But in fact, in their belief, he is in heaven, surrounded by his loved ones, where he is safe, and they will see him again one day. There is still a reward out for finding Jason for $20,000. In the article that I'm not going to dive into, there is some other stuff that involves mysterious identities in these Facebook groups.
Yeah, that stuff is really interesting.
It's very interesting. And I didn't have time to cover it because it's a little bit it's a little confusing. But there are mysterious characters who are preying on people's sympathies in these Facebook groups, which is a lot of what this article was about.
Mm-hmm.
I did want to just tell you the story of Jason Landry because he seemed like a really nice, fun person, sweet pea, who is missed. And his disappearance has led to a massive search, and they're still not done. This article came out in July 2025, so recently. So people are still actively searching and trying to find clues to find him. But I recommend listening or reading that article, Texas Monthly, to find out more.
My story is from Inside Edition, A&E, USA Today, Charlie Project, People, and CBS. Our story starts in Welch, Oklahoma, December 30th, 1999. Ashley Freeman is turning 16, and she has her best friend come spend the night. She has her best friend, Lauria Bible, come spend the night. I had never heard this name before, Lauria. It's like L-A-U-R-I-A. Lauria, right? Right?
Yeah.
I kept wanting to say Laura, and then I was like, there's a floating I in here. I guess Lauria. It's Lauria. So Ashley's mom takes Lauria and Ashley to Pizza Hut, and then they go back to Ashley's house, which is a trailer home, to have a slumber party.
Hmm.
And on the way back, they stop and get some water and some feed for their livestock that they keep. Their trailer didn't have running water, and it was heated by a wood-burning stove, but it has electricity, and you can use a phone. It's kind of interesting the way that Ashley's family lives. I mean, just in the sense that I don't know many people that live this way, probably because I live in Brooklyn, but they live in a remote location, which they love, and they hunt a lot of their food. So there's a lot of guns on the property, and Ashley knew how to hunt. Ashley's boyfriend met them that night as well at a Walmart after they had dinner at Pizza Hut, and he gave Ashley her present, which was a heart-shaped necklace that had her birthstone in it. Then he goes with them to the trailer house, and he leaves around 9:30. Ashley's dad also has some people in Ashley's family over to visit, and they say that the boyfriend left at 10:30. No phone calls are made during the night. The plan the next day is that Ashley's mom is going to take Ashley to go get her driving test. Loria's plan for the next day is to go to the dentist. So they've got plans. They're going to wake up early and get their shit done. But at 6 in the morning, somebody's driving by and says that they see a fire near the motorhome, and they call it in, and the police show up, and sure enough, the mobile home is on fire. They find Kathy's remains inside. That's Ashley's mom.
Whew.
They're like, there's no one else in here, so we don't need to secure the location. We don't need to worry about it. And they're doing whatever police do. God help me. I don't know what that is. They're pretty sure it's got to be Danny, the husband. Like, that's obviously the first thing that you look for. So they think that Ashley's dad did it. And they're like, what probably happened is he killed the mom and abducted these two 16-year-old girls. The only thing is they can't figure out how he would have left, because all the cars that they're aware of that the Freemans own are parked on the premise, and Loria's car is also there from spending the night, and the keys are actually in the ignition, and Loria's purse is inside the trailer. There's no other reason for them to think the girls are there. Like, the only evidence of them being there is the car and the purse. Loria's mom says to everybody, here's what I know. I know that Ashley had saved $1,200 because she wanted to buy a car. And I think she kept it in the trailer in the freezer. And the boyfriend says it wasn't $1,200. It was between $300 and $400. She had saved a lot of money. She was working at a convenience store part-time and saving almost everything for this car. She definitely didn't have a bank account. And yeah, it was in this freezer, but they can't find anything. They can't find any cash or evidence of the cash. I mean, there was a fire. It's not like a perfectly controlled situation. They know that Ashley and her dad had been arguing about that car just because he had an idea of what kind of car he wanted his kid to buy, and she wasn't into it. A lot of people are like, oh, yeah, Danny had a really bad temper, the dad. And he had actually abused his son, Shane. And he was acquitted of those charges, but that's what we know. And we do know that Danny had said that that wasn't something that happened. Like, he had whatever. Loria Bible's parents go to the trailer to try to find more evidence of where their daughter could have gone. And Jay, Loria's dad, goes into the trailer because, again, not a secure crime scene, and kind of pokes around, and under a bunch of debris, he finds the body of Danny.
Oh.
So the cops, who are like, we're pretty sure we know what happened here. It's like, yeah, you definitely don't, because the guy that you thought did it is also dead, also in the trailer. Once they examine these bodies, they discover that both of them were shot. That was the cause of death. Danny's collarbone was also broken. This, probably the fire was just set to burn the crime scene.
Right.
But they still have no idea where these children are, where Ashley and Loria could be. And I wanted to tell you, I talked about Danny's violence against his son, Shane. And because Shane now has two dead parents and a missing sister, you would think he'd come into the picture. But actually, Shane has already died. And I'll tell you the story briefly, which is that in 1998, he was driving a stolen car and a cop pulled him over and alleged that Shane drew a weapon and that he shot Shane in defense. A lot of the family members didn't believe this and thought that the cops were lying. And a lot of these same family members think that the cops had something to do with this fire. Okay. There's some speculation that the girls did it, that Ashley and Loria killed Ashley's parents. It wouldn't be the first time we've heard of a story like that happening.
Right.
So there's speculation as to, did these girls do this and then leave? Again, how did they leave? The cars are all here, but did they do it and leave? Why did they leave the purse? Like, not everything is making sense. And these were, by all accounts, good girls. Like, they do, you know, doing well in school. One's a cheerleader. One's playing basketball. They're nice. They're polite. They don't have behavioral issues. You know, they went to Pizza Hut for a birthday party and then went to the, it just doesn't feel, it's like, it doesn't feel like it's what's happening. Right. They keep investigating, and that leads them to a convicted serial rapist named Jeremy Jones, who's 43. And he also ends up confessing and saying, I actually killed these people over an unpaid debt. And then I set their house on fire. And when the teens ran away, I captured them. I put them in my car. I shot them. I left their bodies in a mine shaft in Kansas. So they're looking for these bodies for a while. They're not finding any evidence that this is the case, but they feel maybe he did it. It's tricky.
Yeah.
In April 2018, and now this is 18 years after the fact, they release information to the public that say, we've still been looking and we found something and it's big and we can't tell you what it is. The break actually happened about a year earlier in 2017 before they released that information. And the break is that the county sheriff is going through some notes and documents, including notes that not the cops had collected, but a private investigator had collected and made. And these papers had been misplaced for a long time and then recovered. And the sheriff's going through them and is like, holy shit, we know who did this.
What?
The evidence leads them to believe that there were three men behind the murder. Warren Philip Welch II, David Pennington, and Ronnie Dean Busick. They believe that these three men are responsible for Danny and Kathy's death and for the abduction of Ashley and Loria. What these documents include is a car insurance verification card. And they found this on the property, and this belonged to a woman who was Welch's girlfriend at the time. But when they went to her, this PI is the one that followed this lead, and when he went to her, she's like, I don't know these people, and I've never been to their house. I don't know why that would have been there, which is weird. Because it's remote. What is it doing there? And that's the biggest clue you've ever seen in your life. And Welch is a neighbor. I mean, he's not, don't picture that he's like living right next to them or anything. Because again, there's a lot of land. But he is a neighbor. He lives less than a mile away. And so you wonder, why didn't they do anything with this evidence? But it seems like it was a big dick contest where the PI brought it to the cops and was like, this is pretty weird that I found this card here. And the cops were like, beat it. This is our case. You're like, what?
Get out of here.
They didn't even look into, okay, so which car is it insuring? Okay, this car. That car is actually in a salvage yard. Let's search it. They just don't do anything. It halts the whole thing, and they're like, buzz off to the PI. Now, this guy Welch is not beloved in his community. He's thought to be not a nice guy, and a lot of people say if this happened, Welch was surely the mastermind. All three of these guys have criminal histories, and Welch and Pennington's criminal history includes violence, and it includes violence against women. They also we know that Welch was a guy that liked to cook meth. He starts dating another woman, not the auto insurance, not the car insurance lady, a different lady in 2000. And she notices that in his house, he has nailed up a poster of a missing poster of Ashley and Loria, which is really weird artwork to choose for your home.
Yeah, not what I would choose as decor.
Right. And she says that she also, she's a big part of this case because she hears him talking to Busick and Pennington about this happening. She hears them saying things that are implying they're behind it, that they murdered these people, that it had to do with drugs, and that they took the girls. And she then goes as far as to say, well, I didn't just hear them talk about it. I saw evidence. And they're like, what's the evidence? I saw Polaroid pictures of these girls on the bed that is in Welch's home.
Oh, no.
Another person that comes forward is someone that was dating Pennington. And she says that she was afraid to come forward earlier because he was abusive. And he had bragged to her, basically. He had done one of those, don't mess with me, I've killed these people before and I'll kill you too. And he also said that he killed them because of a bad drug deal. And that what had happened that night was that there was some sort of drug deal happening in that trailer and that the girls walked in and everything got really heightened because they were maybe owed money. But these three men were like, we're going to take these girls and we're going to do what we want with them. They took them that night. Now, why we believe this woman is that she says to the cops when she's being interviewed, Pennington knew that Welch's girlfriend, whose car we were using, that this like insurance thing fell out of it. He knew that it got left at the scene. And that's not any kind of information that they're running around telling the public that they found this card. So her being able to say, I know that he was worried that this card was there, is them going, this sounds really fucking legitimate.
Yeah.
Like, this is not an angry ex.
Right.
So a lot of people are seeing things. A lot of people, come forward eventually to say that these men in some form or another bragged about this having happened, but they were scared to come forward because often, like I told you, the brags are in the context of, they say things like, we threw these girls in a pit to die. If you do this, you're going to end up getting thrown into a pit. Yeah. So you go forward with this and we'll get you. So people are scared and they have reason to be scared. They also, a bunch of these people saw these Polaroids. So a lot of people knew in this way where the Polaroids have the girls bound and gagged lying on a bed. In some of the pictures, they're duct taped to chairs. We know this to be real because many different witnesses are reporting what they saw in the photos. And it's the same. The stories are matching witness to witness to witness. There's 10 to 15 pictures maybe they took of the girls. And people are saying this is what the blanket looked like on the bed. So like
we have more.
These are credible accounts. Yeah. These are credible accounts of having seen this. And it's so sad. And some of the pictures, Welch is lying next to the girls on the bed.
Ugh.
And it sounds like what happened was that they took these girls and kept them alive for days. We don't know how long. Some say it could have been up to 2 weeks. And that they raped them, tortured them, and then killed them.
Those poor girls. After seeing...
No, I'm telling you that they go back through the evidence in 2017 and find it, go a little bit public with that information in 2018. What you should know is that Welch died in 2007. Pennington died in 2015.
Fuck.
So we've got one guy left standing, Busick. So they arrest him and they charge him and they interview him and he stonewalls them. He doesn't say anything. They can't get him to do anything. So they have to offer him something. They're interviewing him a bunch of times and they're like, ooh, okay, we don't know what to do. We're going to have to offer some kind of immunity, something. And he starts speaking once they start offering things in terms that are more, if I was there, than I might have terms.
Right.
So they say, if you help us find the bodies of these girls, we're going to reduce your sentence, because he's already serving another sentence. And so they can say, we'll reduce that sentence. And it's very strange that we did that. It's not precedented that you would go to somebody that you think might be involved in a quadruple murder and start cutting deals with them. But they really want to find these girls' remains. And Busick is saying, well, I suffer from a lot of memory problems for a lot of reasons. First, he has a low average IQ. Second, he got brain damage from doing so many drugs. And third, he got shot in the head. So he has a lot of reasons. I think probably it's pretty credible to say he has some memory problems. So I think it's tricky because he's like, yeah, I'll help you. And then he's like, who again?
Oh, God. So is anyone going to get justice?
So he's found legally competent to stand trial despite these very serious neurological issues. He keeps saying he doesn't really remember what happened that night, but he does plead guilty to accessory to second-degree murder. And what he recalls is he says, I think we put the bodies in the root cellar. And then they go to the root cellar. He says they're in. They don't find anything. Maybe it was these 55-gallon drums that we sealed and dumped in a river, or a trunk of a car and then taken to a crusher.
What?
It just feels that's what they say they heard. I don't know if Busick is the one that tells them that, but they say they've heard a lot of different stories. And that might be the witnesses repeating what these people said to them.
Right.
It doesn't feel like they ever get a story that leads to – it's a lot of sources telling them this is what I think happened to these bodies and here's why, and them checking them out and them not finding anything to validate or invalidate. So they don't know is what happened to the girls' bodies. They know that they were killed. Busick gets sentenced to 10 years in prison and 5 years of probation. And in 2023 – after he was in prison for 2 years, he is released.
Why?
I don't know. So
these three people killed four people?
Four people. And Loria Bible's mom is still hopeful that her daughter's body will be found. She asked that anybody that knows anything, because all this stuff, people knew a lot, and then they came forward. So she's basically like,
it also sounds like the police knew a lot because they just like looked at the evidence again and they go, oh, we have it.
Yeah.
These people could have been put away ages ago.
Luria Bible's mom says there are several someones out there that can bring the girls home. It's time to bring the girls home. Yeah. And another quote from the family is, we welcome all information leading to their recovery. Until they are home with us, this will never be over.
Yeah.
So you just pray for them that they get that
closure.
It's so sad.
That's awful. That's, wow. What a story of missing children this week.
Always an unhappy
theme. Always a theme. Always a miserable theme.
What are you going to go do today?
I'm going to work and I'm going to make Jordan food and have Jordan come over.
I'm going to go get new eyelashes because the ones they put on me are like gross. They're like plasticky.
Get out of there. Yeah, get like, some get these lashes.
I gotta look like a lady.
I got to ask you.
Be a lady tonight.
Are you going to get the lump crab?
Yeah. I'm going to do it instead of any fish. Just like 1 pound of crab.
Great. All right. I'm going to steal you because you can freeze it. That's the other thing is freezing it.
Oh, yeah.
Easy.
And it's already like in a jar. It's great.
Hey. This is fun. I had fun with you today.
This was fun.
I have regrets, but not this.
Yeah. Well, see you next week. Wait. Bye. Bye.